All right.
All right, yeah. You guys want to start the show?
Let's start the show.
In the great hall of the Justice League.
Looks like we've got him right where he wants us.
Maybe.
I can't find the sugar.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Saturday Morning Cereal. It's that show that celebrates the themes of Saturday morning TV that not only did we grow up with, they've been growing up right alongside with us. It's me, your host, Dan Grimshay, as always, and you're welcome. Also, my apologies, but joining us as always would be Marky, speak up.
Thanks for stepping all over me. I'm here.
Hey, that's what you're there for. Jimmy the Gent is also here as I look across the table in physical reality, real time, in a studio before the Delta kills us. Jimmy, let me hear what you sound like.
This is the sound of my voice.
Yep. That scans.
That's him.
Oh, and wouldn't you just know it, I turn one more clock step over here at 3 o'clock. Johnny Heck.
Hey, yo, this is what happens when you don't lock the studio doors. I managed to claw my way back inside, so.
That's right.
Fair enough.
Just, a patient warrior. Not unlike Meatloaf in Fight Club.
And the same size boobs.
Yeah, absolutely. No. I see you staring at him from across the way. Not for you.
No touchy.
Ooh, someone's getting censored for that. But all right, listen, what is today's episode all about? Well, it's the season 9 premiere. Some people said we wouldn't last that long.
Ha!
And I was proven wrong.
It's been 9. Well, this is the 9th season. We've completed 8. We started in 2013, I think.
Season premiere.
Yeah, that was good. Coming back, I think our first one was Space Command with Mark Zacree.
Oh, wow. In the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, one of the lone gunmen, the blonde one. What's his name? Anybody?
Dean
Haglund.
Trent McClure.
Haglund. He was on that episode. But anyway, yes, we've come a long way. And we're rising to the top with this week's guest.
Yep, that's right. This week's guest we're talking to, well, no, actually, he's right about the same level of stardom. Only because it's a That One Guy episode. That's right. Maestro, play the theme.
Oh, who's that? Oh, that's, he's from, he's That One Guy.
That's That One Guy. all right. It's Billy West.
Billy West.
Now, I have a certain hope deep down inside that a lot of our listeners know exactly who I'm talking about anyway. But it's understandable if you don't, listener. I don't know if even his biggest fans could describe him physically to you. You don't ever see his face, really.
Even from his very beginnings on the Howard Stern show, you're not going to be able to see him.
Exactly right.
Yeah, but I think we should just say real quick. The guy is the new voice of Bugs Bunny.
That's huge.
I mean, it's Bugs Bunny.
He was the voice of Bugs Bunny in the original Space Jam, currently.
Right, currently. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we're talking to him about a new property that just came out in theaters and simultaneously on HBO Max. It's been the talk of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It takes an older movie, readdresses it, makes some changes to make it better. And of course, I'm talking about Suicide. No. Space Jam 2. That's right.
You were about to say Suicide Squad.
That's true. I got a little distracted there just thinking about the parallels.
Same overall plot.
Yeah, it's very, very similar. Yes. But yes, he's the voice of Bugs Bunny in the Space Jam universe.
And also, he's the voice of everything. I mean, if you were trying to find a king of the voice actors, you found him. I don't know. Can someone, I'm not asking for a full-on reading, but can someone just get me a rough estimate of the number of IMDb credits this man has?
I was looking for that, actually, but this new updated IMDb, it's a mess. I don't know where that number is, but just what he's known for, like the top.
Worst intern we've ever had.
I'm sorry. I need to be replaced by a college kid. But yes, just to give you an idea of what he's known for, Futurama, where he's like every voice on that. He's obviously in Space Jam. We're going to talk a lot about this next one, Ren and Stimpy. And of course, Looney Tunes back in action because, you know, the guy played Elmer Fudd. I mean, come on. That's all, folks. No, that's not him. That's Porky. But anyway,
Were you more impressed by Bugs Bunny or Elmer Fudd then?
I liked Elmer Fudd.
It suddenly sounds like you're more of an Elmer Fudd guy.
I did like Elmer Fudd.
Although, I think that places you pretty high on the sociopath test.
Yeah, he was kind of weird. Kind of a weird guy, that Elmer Fudd. But really, you know, he just wanted to hunt. What's the big deal? I understand it. Okay. But yes, anyway. Futurama. Anybody seen it?
What's the name of it?
Futurama.
Yes. Yeah. Love it. He's Fry.
I am
the voice of...
Big fan, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Voice of Fry. Main guy.
Zoidberg.
Professor Farnsworth.
Right.
I mean, out of like the six additional characters voices on there, he's half of them.
Mm-hmm. He carries the show in a lot of ways. And I remember, I want to say it was the second or third season premiere. I was at Comic-Con, and I was right up there, and the whole cast was there. Matt Groening was there, obviously creator of The Simpsons, also created this. And during the Q&A, he's hilarious. It's a really funny dude. And, I mean, the whole cast was just chopping it up. But just kind of watching it with the cast there, it was a really awesome experience. He loves the fans, at least it seems on this panel. He's not, you know, up there just talking shit to everybody. But, no, it seems like a genuinely good dude, and I know... Jimmy, you interviewed him. I mean, probably got the same vibe. I don't want to speak for you, but...
Well, yeah, he was pretty... I thought he was pretty nice. He's nice enough to take a chunk of his day to talk to, you know, a nickel and dime superhero like me. But but he was really cool. He was... it was on Zoom, and he held his phone in his hand the whole time while he was doing it. So it was kind of wobbly. I got a little motion sickness. But we talked about a lot of cool stuff, about how he came up with the voices and how he got the chance to do the original Ren and Stimpy. Like you said, we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the Ren and Stimpy. I mean, I'm a huge
super
future.
Nice.
It kind of feels weird that we haven't already talked about it.
Yeah.
Did we jump beyond the year 2000 by going right to Futurama? Because Ren and Stimpy was
huge.
I'm going to say seminal for our generation.
It was before South Park hit. It was.
Everyone was talking about Ren and Stimpy. Like Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, it was before Beavis and Butthead even. Yeah, it was kind of like this like harbinger of like adult animation.
That started it. Yeah, right. It wasn't, it's like, okay, is it marketed toward kids? Is it marketed toward adults? I mean, you know, yeah. 20s, 30s, everyone was watching it though. It bridged that gap and it was hilarious. I mean, people still quote it to this day,
yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yeah. I think it is a pop culture milestone to like experience that at the time. And even if you were to if you watch it now, it holds up so well. You know, it's just, there's a timelessness to it. It's so funny. I mean, it's talking about like boogers and stuff.
Yes.
You know, like it's so
almost
like,
every frame of that show had a booger.
Yeah.
Of some
very,
kind
very trivial.
That was signature. But it was also so extreme and like artistic. All of this came out of, you guys remember like the Mike and Ike Film Festival animation?
It wasn't Mike and Ike. That's a candy.
Spike and Mike.
Yeah.
Juji Fruit?
No, yeah.
Spike and Ike.
That's the Mike Judge thing, right?
There we go. No, Jimmy's onto it here. The Spike and Ike, that was like in the 80s and stuff.
That's a Mike Judge thing. I believe.
Well, Mike Judge was just another part of it.
Oh, that's yes, right. It is. He's right. It's Mike. Spike and Mike.
Spike and Mike.
Yeah. Spike and Mike.
Okay.
But as I recall, Mike this was basically like there were just so many like film school students and failed Disney artists or frustrated Disney artists with a part-time grudge,
with the grudge
who were making these short, crazy, like animation things. You know, guys who are a little older than us or our age, and this is they're doing in their spare time, and they found enough of them they could buy cheap that they had, you know, the Ren and Stimpy and old Mike Judge cartoons, Bill Plimpton stuff.
Like early Beavis and Butthead.
And they would just tour them through college campuses
back
in the 80s and 90s. And that kind and that is exactly where you got Ren and Stimpy that made the jump from there over to MTV.
I think it was
as Beavis and Butthead. It might have been
Nickelodeon,
actually.
It did start at Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't part of the... I think it was like
I think it was just before all of that. Like it was just like these all kind of hit. Like it like there was like this kind of spring that just kind of like just kind of opened up, and then like all of a sudden like there was this era where Ren and Stimpy came out and Beavis and Butthead came out, and a little bit later, you know, that would lead to Adult Swim, that would lead to South Park. Like it all kind of came.
That was one
era.
Of the incubation moments
for
Saturday morning cartoons, I think. And I think I was probably 10, 11, 12, 13, maybe. And I remember going to one of those festivals, and I remember distinctly there was a Ren and Stimpy cartoon.
Wow.
But way before they were big, there was a Bill Plimpton cartoon.
Okay.
There was a Mike Judge cartoon. It was all about, I think his name was Wendell.
In
a cartoon
version, the guy from the Office Space,
and it had the, you know, the we're gonna need to all of that back in like 1987, 88, and there were a couple of early DreamWorks.
Wow,
I mean not DreamWorks, Pixar
cartoon.
I mean this was all of that stuff.
It became so much bigger.
Mm-hmm. Was something I knew nothing about, and it wasn't popularly known. Like the little snowman one, the little dude cleaning his tool. Like all of that came out way before they could afford to do Toy Story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a huge, huge influence that stuff like that came through. And Billy West has touched almost every piece of it. That filthy little maggot. Mm.
That's a good way to put it.
Way to bring it back around, Dan. Master the segue.
That's right. Ren and Stimpy kicked in the door for a lot of these shows and said, okay, this works on Nickelodeon, a show that, it's not super risque like Beavis and Butthead. It kind of took it to the next level. But then South Park took it to another level, and then Family Guy, and it keeps rolling on. But without that initial door being kicked in, really helped it. And he was there. He was the main dude, not to take away from the creators of Ren and Stimpy and other voices and actors, but he's continued on. And like we said, I mean, hundreds, I would assume, of IMDb credits. And again, Futurama, big fan of it. Yeah. I mean, it's super red. To Bugs Bunny, too. He voiced the honeybee on Cheerios commercials. I mean, pretty iconic roles, you know? You don't know it.
If you listen to the Stern Show, he does the voice of the Jackie Martlin puppet.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that. Wow.
It was, I believe, he was the only one many years ago who got away more or less unscathed for a really a scandalous prank phone call gone wrong.
On Stern?
On what? Stern. And maybe it was the end of Bubba the Love Sponge's career or something. Like a whole cascade of events happened where he was involved and managed to just drift off because no one knew who he was. I wish I had more memory of this now that I've gotten us knee deep into it.
And this is like, as soon as you take the top off of a guy like freaking Billy West, like all this stuff that you've heard over the last 25 years just starts to like kind of spew out. This guy's been a part of pop culture for such a long time and real important. Like Howard Stern is no small part of pop culture. It's a whole movement. It's the last of the radio great personalities, you know.
I mean, yes, Baba Booey and such. I don't want to equate it directly with cartoons, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
No, but I mean, he's been a part of all this, you know, from the very, very, very beginning, from our, you know, young lives. This guy's been around for a very long time, and it's like, you know, this is why we're doing this particular episode, is to introduce you to the guy. This is that. Yes. This is that one.
This
guy.
This is that one guy who, by the way, I did look it up while we were talking on IMDb. He has 261 credits.
That's a
now that sounds like a lot.
That is a lot.
And because you forgot two, and that's right. Not on you.
Yeah.
Right. But also pretty much everything he's on, he does 3 to 4
characters.
25 characters.
Yeah. And then some of those shows last for years.
Yeah.
I mean, Futurama just wouldn't stop coming back, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Ren and Stimpy went on for a good while. Then movies.
And Ren and Slimer on the Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it probably, all the lines for a whole season as Slimer on the Ghostbusters, as I recall, could have been recorded in 20 minutes.
Which he probably did. And they just looped it, and they just, you know, put it in there again.
That's why they call him one take Billy West. It's like, print it! Print off it! Done!
Got it. Hot dogs.
Someone light my cigar, yeah. I'm leaving.
I'm going to spill my martini if I keep up
to
these goddamn lines.
Okay, try to sound scary with your mouth full of hot dogs.
Go. You can do it.
Go. And he could have done it, too.
Yeah.
And the guy is, there is a certain advantage when you work in voice acting. I think we've noticed, we've spoken to enough voice actors here on the show. When you're there in the studio recording something, they might also say, oh, hey, before you leave, if you got another 40 minutes, we need a dog sheriff.
Yeah.
We need a guy falling down some stairs. We need a fat housewife. Can you do 5 more lines?
And of course, he's there all day, so he's just going to record them.
And that leads to just getting another booking. Anybody who works in voice acting is going to have more IMDb credits than me and you.
And it's simple as this is
combined.
There's, I don't think that voice acting takes a back seat to any other type of acting. I think it's an amazing talent. I think some people can do it, and some people can't. Like, I don't think
that's not what you said on our TV show.
I don't think that Robert De Niro could do voice acting. I think he just wouldn't be able to do it.
He did good on The Dogfather.
Action.
He's on the animated Godfather. Or did it?
I don't think that happened.
He was, wasn't he the shark in Shark Tale?
Oh, my.
Wasn't
Shark.
He like the,
yes.
Yeah. Yes,
he absolutely
was.
Holy shit.
I've never seen that. I had no idea.
And he was pretty good.
He's pretty good.
He did a good job playing Robert De Niro as a shark.
Yeah. Look, yes. He gave the shark a mole too on his cheeks.
I love your one word impression of Robert De Niro.
And speaking of that too, when you have and this is nothing new, but for a while, just big name celebrities like A-listers are doing VO work, and unfortunately, takes away from guys who this is their career, like a Billy West and a lot of others that have just as many, if not more, credits. It kind of takes away from them. It's like, let's have this seasoned, super professional guy. Oh, we got De Niro, or we got Owen Wilson. And it's like, well,
but you know they're just going to do their voice.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no voice acting. It's just
and you know what's
this.
Heartbreaking about that is that if you said to Billy West right now, like, hey, can I hear your best Robert De Niro and we can record a couple lines?
He could probably nail it with no prep. Yep.
They want the name on the De Niro on the poster or Owen Wilson. And not to, again, take away from Cars was really successful, but it's just Owen Wilson reading lines.
Yeah.
I mean.
Oh, wow.
That's
seems harsh. But, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I do assume, I mean, I was going to say I know, but I assume, why wouldn't he? But when our man here, Jimmy the Gent, was talking to Billy West, he probably had him do a Robert De Niro impression or Owen Wilson or something on the spot, right?
I did, but that unfortunately wasn't rolling at the time.
God damn it! Once again, magic interview machine. Why don't we just go ahead and listen to this interview where Jimmy grills the hell out of Billy West?
Meanwhile,
right? How are you today, Billy?
I'm not bleeding from any holes, so I must be doing okay.
Okay, that's a good way to start the day, right?
Yeah.
Well, you're known for just about too many voices, right? Fry, Ren and Stimpy, Invader Zim, Slimer, Woody Woodpecker. But we're today. I want to get out of the business out of the way first, if I could. We'll talk about Space Jam. A new legacy is coming out, but we're re-releasing Space Jam.
Right.
It's coming out on 25th anniversary, 4K, ultra high def Blu-ray.
Yeah.
For the 25th anniversary. So I wanted to, if I'm fortunate enough to get a chance to talk to the man, let's talk about that for a little while, if we could. How did you get that job? You were pretty known for Ren and Stimpy at the time. Is that right?
Yeah, I was, but I was working in New York in radio on the Howard Stern show, and producer Ivan Reitman had produced Howard's movie Private Parts, and he came in to watch the show a few times, and he got a load of me, and he watched how we could just like create something out of nothing, and I went wild a couple of times, and he wanted to know if I would audition for Space Jam, so I did, and I got the part.
Do you know who you were up against? Was there anybody, did you know who you were competing for the roles with?
I think it's the usual suspects. I think at the time it was probably Joe Alasky. He's since passed on. Or Greg Burson. He also has passed on. So it would have been Jeff Bergman and me, I guess. I think that's who was up for it. I don't officially know, but you know.
Couple guesses. What about, do you remember at the time, it'd probably be a lot easier to do it today, but being a seasoned veteran as you were, what's it like? Can you recall at the time stepping into those iconic voices?
Well, it was kind of it was daunting because I worked really hard at doing it, and you know, and I was with the other performers, and they everybody was supportive of everybody else. I just felt like, yeah, those are big shoes to try and fill. So you just do the best you can. You do, you pick a period where Bugs, you know, behaved and looked a certain way. There's like decades of him, but each director kind of had him being a little bit different. So you pick one, and the producers had their favorites, but it's so funny. I mean, when I was working, everybody that popped in the door was like, he's too Jewish. Or he's too Brooklyn, or he's too cute. You know, there was always something. I was like, shit up.
So you were leaning more towards the older Scott, closer to the original Bugs?
I think, I mean, somewhere in the middle, maybe the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then after that, you were the voice of Bugs Bunny for kind of everything for a little while, right? The official voice?
Yeah, for a while. It's nobody's gig officially. I mean, because, well, I always knew it wasn't mine. I mean, it was mine for a day. I was a day player. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't create the voice, so I didn't have the same kind of emotional investment in it if I did it or didn't do it. It was great to do it, and it's quite a legacy. But, you know, I mean, given my druthers, I'd rather have the opportunity to create characters, you know, from nothing, or just at least from guidance of creators, you know, mm-hmm. that draw the pictures and show you and tell you about the character.
What? So you created Ren and Stimpy, and people might not recognize Powdered Toast Man as much, but you talk about creating what? Stimpy would be Larry Fine, right?
Yes.
Based on him?
Sort of. Based on him. Larry was like, hey, Mo, there's too much tinsel in the tree. You know, and Stimpy was like, hey, Ren, will you button me? You know, so it was like amped up. He was kind of childlike. And and I created the voice for that. I didn't create the show. And I also was given a tape in the beginning of what they wanted for the Ren voice. So I practiced that and, you know, went with what my take on it was. And we were in New York, me and John Chris Felucci, and we went over to MTV and literally we're in a closet with a broom and a bucket, you know, with a mic attached to it. It was right out of Hollywood, up the hall from Kurt Loder's office. And, you know, I was reading, like, you know, like this in the closet. And then he went in and had a meeting with the women from Nickelodeon. And he came out, he said, congratulations, what you did just helped us sell the show. And then that was the end of that. And he decided he was going to do the voice. And I didn't really care because I had a gig. I was just happy for that. But, you know, history played out a different way.
Right. You also splintered those early days of Nickelodeon. You splintered off into the other two of the original three cartoons they had on Nickelodeon. Was that because of your performance on Ren and Stimpy? Did you get that gig, or is it somehow a coincidence that you struck lightning and all those shows are on the same network?
It was a coincidence. It was a coincidence that they were looking for people to do voices for these new cartoons that were going to play on a Sunday morning. It was a three cartoon block: Rugrats, Doug, and Ren and Stimpy. All this stuff was going on independently of each other. Like, I was working with the Ren and Stimpy people, and then at the very same time I was auditioning for the Doug people. And Mary Harrington and Vanessa Coffey, you know, they just liked what I did. And then they thought, oh, wait a minute, he's already doing this other thing. But it was okay, you know, I mean, they liked it. And and Jerry Laybourne was head of the network. And I did like four seasons of that.
Yeah. Then you, the next kind of biggest hit on your timeline would be the Futurama, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And how well did you, were you a friend of Matt Groening's before this? Did you guys meet?
No,
after
I mean,
this?
Of course I was well aware of him.
Sure.
He knew who I was, you know, from Ren and Stimpy. And they asked me to come in and audition. And I auditioned for a couple of characters. And I went home, and, you know, about a week or so later, I found out that I got two of the characters that I auditioned for. And then we went and did table reads and stuff. And then they rearranged things, and I was doing Fry, the professor, and Dr. Zoidberg. And then later I would be doing Zap Brannigan.
Uh-huh. After Phil Hartman passed away?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
A lot of people want to ask you about Dr. Zoidberg and Dr. Farnsworth, but what's your inspiration for Fry? Where did he come? Where does that voice come from? Where does that start?
That comes from when I was 25 years old. That's my voice. Because I remember what I sounded like. I was in a band, you know, and if I broke a string or an amplifier blew up or something, I'd be like, oh, man, the fuck, you know? I was whiny and nasally and complainy, and I figured that would be as good a voice as any. I was tentative, you know, all the things that Fry kind of is.
What if you couldn't do voices? What do you think you would do? That's you made on Howard Stern, that's kind of how you got your start getting noticed, right? Was doing the voices, right?
Well, I started in Boston before I ever was with Howard Stern. I was doing radio in Boston, but I was a musician. I probably would have been a musician.
Mm-hmm. Do any of these vast mountain of characters that you've played, do any of them speak to you? Are any of them closest to the real Billy West?
I don't much hear from them. They're there when I draw upon them, but, you know, I mean, I'm a journeyman. It was just like, you show up and you're going to build a staircase today. So you better bring the right tools, and you better do this, and you better be conscientious, and you want it to last forever.
Right.
That's the same kind of thing. You know, I also had immigrant mentality, and it was like, if you better do the right stupid little witty voice today, or you go home and your house will be gone. Like the Twilight Zone.
Did you have any sense at the beginning of any of these? Maybe you had an idea at the beginning of Futurama that it might be a hit coming off of Matt's success.
I was hoping for that, but I wasn't counting on it. I mean, you're taking it a day at a time. And even if you're in the middle of a cultural phenomenon, you have no idea what's going on. You don't know what the resonance is out there in the world until you start hearing things. And But the idea was to go in there and just bang it out and do the absolute best that everybody could do. And that's what happened. I was that was my favorite job of all time, I think. I got to express myself really well.
Mm-hmm. I spoke with Wally Wingert a little while ago, a fellow voice actor. I don't know if you know him.
Yes, I do.
He was telling me he likes to watch videos of people doing his voices, like the Riddler and Invader Zim, and doing impressions of his impressions. Is that something that you're into at all?
People send me stuff occasionally, and I enjoy it. I like to see people, you know, I mean, you know, getting into the arts in any way, even if you're dipping your toe, is a good idea to me, you know. Mm-hmm. Considering all the trouble in the world and everything, I think people that get into the arts, whether it's doing voices or playing music or acting or singing, whatever, sculpting, painting, it keeps you out of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Idle voice box, right?
Yeah.
So I was kind of looking for a bit of a crossover. I took a chunk out of my day and went down your IMDb page. Mm-hmm. But I was looking for maybe possibly on Batman the Brave and the Bold or Batman the New Adventures. Did you ever cross over and work with Adam West at all in your career?
I didn't work with him on that show, but I worked with him on another show called Spy Dogs.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, and he was on that, and it was fun, you know, and I used to see him all the time at Comic-Con conventions, and we hit it off, you know. He got a kick out of the stuff that I was doing, and I was reverential, of course, because I was a teenager when Batman was on TV. I'd just throw my homework out the window and watch TV.
Right. Do you recall at the time when you were watching it as a young man, were you aware of the comedy aspect of it, or were you still in it for the adventures?
I was aware of the comedy aspect of it. You know, I mean, I was smarter than probably most of the kids that were watching it. I knew that Frank Gorshin was imitating Richard Widmark.
Mm-hmm.
As a psycho from an old movie from the 50s or the 40s, Tommy Udo, the giggling psycho. And I knew those things, and I thought, this is hilarious, but it's so well done. You have to like stand back in awe of appreciation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was wonderful. Then it started to get a little silly, but every show did after about five seasons. Voice of the Bottom of the Sea started having carrot men, you know, and
they ran out of
everything. Lost in Space, same thing.
Especially back then, you can usually see when they started to run out of money and were just riding, coasting it out when the quality went down and all the backdrops kind of disappeared, the back walls and everything.
Yeah, Lost in Space was lost when they had bikers from another planet showing up. And, you know, it's great. It's great amusement. And I was very close to some of those people on the show. Jonathan Harris.
Oh yeah.
Was a friend of mine. And he was wonderful. He was just wonderful. And that wonderful character he played, Dr. Smith, it was just so deliciously evil but silly. And those are my favorite kind of villains, I guess.
Yeah. He started off pretty dark, but quickly morphed into kind of the comedy relief on that show.
Yes.
Do you have any favorite memories of Jonathan Harris since you brought him up?
Yes. I remember when I was like a teenager, I used to read TV Guide, and there was no way you could know anything about show business back in those days. You just couldn't. You know, it's not like now where 98% of everybody's day is show business. Mm-hmm. But back then it was like, you had to dig around, and in TV Guide, there were some yellow teletype pages, and it was a report from a guy named Neil Hickey, and he would talk about what shows were coming up in the fall. And that, I lived for that stuff. I wanted to know what was going on, and it said two new shows, Star Trek and Lost in Space. And so, you know, I just scoured anywhere and everywhere I could get some information on what was going on in the business. Excuse me. And so I read this article in TV Guide about the hairstylist to the stars. His name was Jay Sebring. And, you know, this was 1966. And, you know, he was a happening guy and he cut everybody's hair. David Jansen, The Fugitive, all the famous TV shows, probably Robert Vaughn and David McCallum, whatnot. Right. And he did Jonathan Harris's hair. This is what I read. And I thought, well, that's something to talk to him about, you know. So finally, one day I meet him and I'm working with him a million years later. And I said, you know, I remember reading about you getting your hair cut in Hollywood by a guy named Jay Sebring. And he goes, Jay Sebring? Jay Sebring? He ruined me. And I was like, what do you mean? And he just said, he ruined me. And Jonathan told me that he finished with Lost in Space and he had to go back and do retakes, but Jay Sebring fucked up his hair somehow. So I had to like patch and glue pieces of his hair back and everything. And he, and then Jonathan just looked and went, oh, how I laughed when he was murdered. And I thought that was hysterically funny, but Jay Sebring was murdered in the Tate-LaBianca murders, the Manson murders.
Yeah.
Jay Sebring.
Wow. Talk
it's,
about
it's awful, but it's funny.
Yeah, yeah. Talk about holding the grudge, him. Huh? Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Dr. Smith, you don't mess with him.
Right. So it sounds like you might go back just a couple of years before me. But when I was a young man, I used to get up early on Saturday mornings and pour myself a big bowl of cereal to watch Saturday morning cartoons. So, Billy West, I'm wondering, what was your favorite Saturday morning cartoon and what kind of cereal did you eat?
Oh, gosh. What did I watch? God, I watched the the very first Hanna-Barbera cartoons when I was a little kid, you know, like Rough and Ready.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first one that they did. This is after they did Tom and Jerry for MGM. And Rough and Ready was Don Messick and Dawes Butler. And I just was endlessly amused by things like that. I used to watch a show called Spunky and Tadpole. What else did I watch? Superman, and I saw the Warner Brothers cartoons, but I lived in Detroit, and we were getting our shows from CKLW Channel 9 in Windsor, and what they had for prints of those cartoons, I mean, they were films of films of films when I saw them, so they were ratty looking, but I didn't care because I heard the voices, and I would just be energized. Too energized to eat cereal. I mean, I was just like blown away molecularly.
Yeah. Yeah. I also grew up in Detroit and I'm familiar.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think they ever got new copies of those cartoons. Like
I mean, but it's amazing when you see what they really looked like nowadays. When I see it now. Yeah. The remasters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're all of them. Even the shitty cartoons are almost filmically beautiful.
You know? I agree. Surprisingly so. Like, when I get my kids ready for school, I found on HBO has a lot of the old Looney Tunes, like the really old ones. And that's what I watched when I was getting ready for school. So I get them up and I put them on and I'm kind of blown away to see them in, as I used to watch them in 19-inch black and white grainy, and to see them this big, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really blows me away.
I used to enjoy the Flintstones when that first premiered on TV.
Yeah.
It came on Friday nights. And
primetime, right?
Yeah, primetime.
Yeah.
And I listened to the beautiful voices and everything. And, you know, I met Mel Blanc once, but I did get to work with, who did I get to work with? Oh, Jean Vanderpil, who played Wilma. I worked with her doing voiceover on Weird Al Yankovic's kids show that he had for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so crazy to be standing working with Wilma, you know. I've been very, very lucky. I've either worked or met most of my idols in my life.
Right.
Super lucky.
But now you're kind of in that crowd. You know, they were your idols. Now a lot of people idolize, a lot of younger voice actors idolize you. You're kind of you're in the mix of all the iconic big names. Like, you know, when they talk about
weird. It's so weird to think of things that way, but I mean, one of the things that I liked about performing was I never played it small. You know, I was emphatic. I was filled with emotion, and I tried to put it even into the characters that weren't coloring outside the lines, because you needed to make it bigger than life. It needed to be bigger than two dimensions. And what you did had to last for all time. You couldn't do throwaway voices, you know. Even the garbage man, I've got to dig through the periphery of show business to find some cool voice, you know, for him, like William Bendix or somebody, you know.
Deep cuts.
That's where good voices come from. And what they are is they can be fusions. Like, you can take the voice of one character and fuse it with the personality of another in showbiz periphery. And even if you do a crappy impression, it's a voice no one's ever heard before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, one of my best impressions is Gilbert Godfrey doing Groucho Marx. So I'm kind of I'm a couple people out. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know we started late, but
I love Gilbert. I get him. I always got him, and I was on his show a bunch of times. And you know, I'm like, I know where he's coming from, and we talk about the most peripheral things. But they're funny.
Yeah, he's got. I enjoy his podcast. I devour it weekly, and he's got some really interesting. I guess conspiracy theories about Cesar Romero and.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'll let him tell. I don't know if we should. That's probably.
I don't know. It's probably. It's probably the theory that everybody that ever existed was gay.
Yeah, it leans that it leans into that.
Yeah. Hercules. Mm-hmm. You know. Prometheus.
Everybody.
Champ.
Right. Let's talk about your podcast, the Billy West podcast. Is that the name? Mm-hmm. How long?
I did that a while back. It's just, it was too time consuming for me to do because I was really busy, but I wouldn't mind doing another one, but it was labor intensive because I pre-recorded everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to produce them. You had to add sound effects and you had to mix and match voices and, you know, I mean, I had fun, but I think there's a lot easier way to do those things.
Yeah. Still looking for the easy way myself, right?
Well, no, you're doing it perfectly fine. I mean, this is what radio used to be,
mm-hmm.
you know, until it got all effed up. You know, I remember old radio and I remember the people that used to sit down in a room with a microphone and, you know, people like, oh God. His name, I can't think of his name now. Paul Harvey.
Oh, yeah.
He'd be like, "Hello, Americans. Friends, you know what you and I need? Really need? That's a good cup of coffee." You know, he would have pauses and it would draw you in.
Yeah. You mentioned the radio I grew up listening to. I think it might have been one of the college channels, but they'd play all the old radio shows like The Lone Ranger and The Inner Sanctum and those type of things.
Jack Benny.
Yeah.
Those were fabulous, fabulous shows.
Oh, yeah. I wish I found The Inner Sanctum and I still listen to that to this day. That's some really good stuff, just really grabs you and ropes you in. And I didn't know how derivative the Twilight Zone was of that.
Oh, well, everything's a derivative of something. You know, you saw Midnight in Paris. Explained it pretty well.
Yeah. Is there anything else on my way out the door? Is there anything else you want to plug? Anything else?
I'm still doing...
Disenchantment season 3?
I'm still doing Disenchantment, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's season 3. And I really have a good time doing that. Although we were chopped up during the pandemic and I was recording stuff out of my house and I wasn't interfacing with anybody. It was very strange because I like to work with the others. I really do.
You're normally in the booth with the other actors
Yes.
Or a booth facing or something.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, you have the directors right there. You have everybody, you know, you can play off whatever dynamics your fellow performers are are up to. And, you know, that kind of chopped everything in half for a while. But I think we'll be back to normal very soon.
I hope so. We're leaning that way.
Yeah. And I look forward to doing more stuff. I mean, I still do commercials. And
mm-hmm. You did the is this new commentary for Space Jam re-release, or is it what they had before?
I think it might be what they had before.
Okay.
But, you know, I wasn't sure. I didn't know they were re-releasing it in tandem with the release of the new version of it.
Oh, yeah.
But I look forward to seeing it. I mean, it looks pretty good.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. It does look pretty good. And you're not in the new one, right?
No.
No cameos for Billy.
No. I'm too old for that stuff.
Right on. Well, I thank you for your time, Billy. I really appreciate it. I'm sorry about the mix-up there.
Where's that noise? Go away. Who's there?
The taste of nuts and honey, Mr. Scrooge.
Ah, humbug. I've better things to do.
But Mr. Scrooge, it's part of this good breakfast.
My customary gruel will suffice, thank you.
Yeah, but Honey Nut Cheerios blends the taste of real golden honey and nuts.
I said, did you say honey and nuts?
Look at that. Billy West as the Honey Nut Cheerio Bee, saving about 2 hours worth of Christmas Carol right there.
I think I get the gist.
Right over. Yeah. Charles Dickens didn't know what the fuck he was doing.
Dickens got paid by the word. a lot like Billy West.
A lot like Billy West. So that was a commercial with Billy West, and before that, an interview with Billy West, and before that, a meandering discussion vaguely about Billy West.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes another. Welcome back, everybody. So, Billy West.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts, comments, concerns?
Well, I think we nailed the Ren and Stimpy thing pretty well. I don't think we have to rehash that one.
All right.
But I would like some clarity. So this guy, he was the Bugs Bunny in Space Jam, right?
Space Jam, the 1996
The release. One with Jordan. The
25th anniversary, released July 6th. Pick it up on digital and Blu-ray.
All right. Which we've all seen and we all liked. But does anybody like LeBron James enough to watch the new one?
I saw the new one.
Oh, okay. Was it any good?
Was it because you love LeBron James?
No.
Okay.
I saw it because it was Space Jam, and, you know, I want to support the franchise.
You want to support the franchise.
Right.
But Billy West did not reprise the role of Bugs Bunny in the second one.
Correct.
Okay.
Because he died in the first one, I assume.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it a dislike for LeBron, but my not liking him didn't take away from my enjoyment of the piece.
Okay, fair enough.
So wait a minute. I want to unsift this review. Space Jam 2, thumbs up. LeBron, thumbs down.
No, I would say thumbs three quarters up for the whole thing. He was fine.
So you're
averaging the
two scores.
We might not see him again in a bit major tentpole motion picture for a little while. But
he's not going to launch a franchise the way Michael Jordan did. Not.
Yeah, he also will not.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So I'd say he did the job. I actually have not seen that, and I'm going to come clean here. I think we went over this in a recent episode. It's better just be honest about it. I never saw Space Jam.
Mm.
Oof.
It came out in 96. It was one of the few times I spent a full calendar year in college.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't get around to it.
One of the few times.
Made it almost two whole semesters that time. So I didn't have time to go out and see Space Jam. And honestly, it feels like I betrayed myself in that way. Because I thought I was grown up at that time. In 96, I would have been 18, 19 years old. I finally thought, well, that's it. I'm too old for cartoons.
That's 10 years away from the Roger Rabbit kind of buzz.
10 too. Years earlier, I was totally cool with cartoons growing up. What can I say? Looking back, maybe I should have been into it. I have a lot of shame about that. You guys all saw it, though. And you recognize it as a seminal generation break or something?
Jimmy, have you?
I don't know about that. I mean, at the time when it came out in 96, I seem to remember it like being groundbreaking animation because they were 3D animated mm-hmm. at the and for the time, like similar to how Roger Rabbit was.
Yeah.
Shaded, like in each shell was was individually shaded,
mm-hmm.
right? So that was when you read about that,
you're like, "Oh, I'm going to go see this movie."
Well, that I probably would have saw it anyways, but I do remember that was part of the fervor at the time.
Oh, that Space Jam MJ. Fervor in '96.
Yeah, yeah, couldn't get away from it. It's like Batman in '89.
The fervor was everywhere. Yeah.
It had some heat, man.
Yeah, didn't you have a cool story?
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, did you see it, Johnny Heck?
Yeah, I mean, so at the time I was in high school, I was working at a Blockbuster Video.
And, what a difference.
Yeah,
St. Venus High football rules.
Yeah, so yeah, some of those younger kids Google what that is. they had these things called video cassettes. Anyway, there's a few movies that people just really lost their shit about trying to get and trying to find because it's always sold out. And I remember Space Jam was the first one. It was like, oh, no. People are, you know, they're coming with pitchforks and torches trying to get this and yelling at my young ass like it's my fault because it's gone. And it's like we had a 50-100 copies maybe just constantly gone. And we would have one copy, like a promo copy that would run on the TVs. They're like, well, what about that one? It's like, oh, it's a promo copy. So now I've only seen it. It's a lot of ways embedded in my mind. So I try to forget it because it was just on loop for 8 hours and people are yelling at you about it. So I have mixed emotions about it from that.
It's a little traumatizing.
Like a little traumatizing, getting yelled out about like a, you know, at the time, like a, you know, some mom in her mid-30s, at, you know, a teenage kid. I'm just like, I'm sorry.
So you were basically like the de facto gatekeeper when it was all on fire and it proved that it wasn't a kid's movie. Right. It was the ultimate everybody movie.
Oh, yeah, it was a family movie. Everyone wanted it.
Sometimes you would go to Blockbuster saying, I'm going to see what they have.
Mm-hmm.
But more often than not, you would go saying,
I hope
they have a copy of X, Y, or Z because it just came out.
Space Jam.
Oh, and for sure, the rumors are
that's
true.
That's what it's called. Thank you, Jim.
If you were a cool customer that came in a lot and you weren't a dick, we would hide those movies for the cool people. Make no doubt about it. Everyone would. So all you people yelling at those like Blockbuster
regulars
kids back in
the day? At a Blockbuster?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you were cool, man, we would hide that stuff for you.
What would it take to be cool? Like, were you getting tips?
So you're saying that people would come in and rent physical copies of media?
Yes.
That's how it happened. Some sort of like a library exchange system.
And, right. Yeah. And you turn it in 1 minute late, you get charged $2.16 per day.
Motherfucker.
You know, I remember having those like I remember like what like made that company better than your mom and pop video rental places is that if you were late at a mom and pop video rental place, then you just wouldn't go back there because you didn't want to pay your freaking late fees again. But freaking Blockbuster would send you a fucking bill.
Oh, they would send you to collections.
They would send you to
collections.
They
had your social, they had your credit card number, they had your address. Oh, yeah.
And that's why I do not shed one goddamn tear for Blockbuster.
Is that why you didn't see Space Jam, Dan?
Because you just refused to play the Blockbuster game?
It was, well, actually, that was kind of a time, my 1 year, full year in college, where my credit was probably so bad that I would have been afraid to get a membership at a Blockbuster.
Yeah.
A lot of that was a big hole in my viewing time.
So Shay's just playing hacky sack in the quad going, fuck Blockbuster, man, fuck it.
Yeah. I was going to say,
I'll just watch it on 24-hour loop from out here. I'm going to bring in my buddy's remote that works with Toshiba TVs and turn on the closed captioning. And that,
don't sell yourself short, Dan. A lot of guys go to school, college for 1 year. They're called janitors.
Oh, no. What about Jimmy? What was the first time you saw Space Jam?
Was it before or after you got your doctorate?
Funny you should ask. This would have been in the mid-90s. I seem to recall it being some pretty dark drinking days. But I don't know if this story is going to be as funny as I remember it, but we had...
I don't see how a story that starts out with my dark drinking days is going to disappoint.
I mean, almost all my stories start out like that. But my buddy and I had gone to go see it in the middle of the afternoon. He was getting me out of the house. I wouldn't sit around drinking all day. And we go to see Space Jam, and the place is packed with, families and kids and, you know, just a kids'
cartoon movie, right? Aficionados.
Yeah, well, I think it's G-rated, right? So we come rolling in with our big seven
wines, ups, cheeses. And, you guys, I'm sure you guys can get the ambiance here.
Couple bottles of gin, right? So little minis. So we loaded up our drinks and we're sitting there. I'm ready to prepare to enjoy Space Jam, and couple big swigs, and I'm loving it. I'm laughing, and I don't even think Michael Jordan's on the screen yet. Like, nothing funny's happened. I'm just laughing, and everybody's looking at me. So I was laughing so hard I knocked over my big soda, and hit the floor and just goes boosh. And you could hear it. You could hear the ice
and
going down.
And smell it too. You could probably smell the booze.
Probably smell the booze. Right? Yeah. Maybe. Yep. So I did not enjoy my first go around of Space Jam. I just sat there stink eyed. Poo poo and my arms folded. This stupid Bugs Bunny thinks he's funny. Gonna dunk on Michael hammered. Jordan. Because I was just salty because I couldn't drink. But after I did go to Blockbuster, not yours, Johnny, but I think I went to a different Blockbuster. They had it. But I did like it. I mean, it's good enough.
They sure didn't have it at yours, Johnny.
No, I made sure I hit them all, too.
Ironically, I watched it when I was.
Well, that was a strategy. You go in, and if it's the hot movie, you don't go. You don't even go through that little turnstile weird entrance exit thing that they've got. You go straight around the corner to the kid who's dumping out the returns.
Absolutely. Yeah, they'd be around like you're a Beatle, man, like walking to stage. They just crowd the desk. It's like, is that it? Is that it? Oh, I was here first. Just elbowing each other. And it's just
Baron Munchausen in? Yeah.
There was a time when trying to get your hands on a copy of Johnny Mnemonic on VHS was probably the same as trying to get a PS5 right now.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Let that sink in.
Johnny Mnemonic.
That's a good movie.
Keanu Reeves, for all you listening out there. Marky, I haven't heard when you saw this Spash drama.
Well, I saw it... Michael Jordan picked me up. Here we go. He had it.
Every time he tells this story, the dick gets bigger and bigger.
It was on VHS, but it was in his Lamborghini. He had a little TV in there. I thought it was fine. It was a good time.
Did you go to Vegas?
Did he bet double or nothing on whether they won or not?
The movie. He did. He's
betting on the game with the monsters.
He's a degenerate gambler. Everybody knows that.
Like, why they bet on the monsters to win? Again.
I thought they'd get it this time.
We should probably all regret going down that road. But
yes, we'll I have. I have no specific memory of watching the. I've seen it, but I don't remember what the situation was. Mm. You know, so sorry, disappoint you.
Huh.
Other than the Michael Jordan story,
yeah, that's good.
But yeah, it was obviously it was a big deal back then. You know, it was great to see, like, Jordan was, he's still maybe the biggest athlete of all time. And, you know, to see him in that kind of venue, it was obviously a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And
well, you've heard about this guy, LeBron James, that's in the new one, right?
Yeah, nobody cares about LeBron
James. Well, he's got him by about 4 inches, I'm pretty sure. Yeah. So if you're talking about the biggest athlete of all time.
I mean, you might enjoy him.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tiger Woods.
Yeah. There's just
so many yardsticks to measure that by. But before we go, let's go ahead and dive down that hole a little further and say, what is the best movie where a professional athlete turned in a leading performance?
Well, Lance Armstrong, Dodgeball. Go.
Not a leading performance.
Leading performance.
It's got to be a leading performance. Good They've Lord. Got to Good put Lord, as man. Much effort forth as Michael Jordan did. Now, obviously, the first question is LeBron James. It sounded like maybe tongue in cheek, Jimmy. You were saying,
"Look, I'm going to go."
He did better. He was fine.
I got
he
one.
Was, I mean, he was no better or no worse than Michael Jordan was.
They're tied.
So I'm going to say
Jordan has six rings, though.
I'm going to say professional boxer turned actor Tony Danza, who's the boss.
Ooh,
what movie was he the lead in?
Not a professional athlete, though.
He was a professional. He was an amateur.
Amateur boxer. And if I'm wrong, I'll pay for it later, but I'm not going to let you get away with
that. Are you boys familiar with the Naked Gun series?
And maybe,
maybe Mr. Simpson's.
You've already got an answer.
Maybe Mr. Simpson's.
You got OJ.
Lazinski, worthy of note. Let someone else pick that one.
All right. I got Rowdy Roddy Piper.
And that wins. There's no other answer.
Wait, hold on. Rowdy Roddy Piper and what?
They live.
They live, bro.
Yeah.
That's the best.
That's the best.
I came here to do two things. Chew bubble gum and kick ass.
And I'm all out of bubble gum.
And I'm all out of bubble gum.
So you think he's better than Jesse Ventura in Predator?
But oh, my God. Like that's really good. That's not leading.
I mean
yeah. Jesse's...
Three right. stars.
Under your rule, he is a professional. He doesn't qualify.
I know. I think you, yeah. He's
that was an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
He's a professional.
But he still got a leading win because it was a very small cast.
Yeah, but no, it was, that was a Schwarzenegger movie.
He was at least top seven on the call sheet.
But, okay, but also, actually, Arnold Schwarzenegger is a professional athlete.
All right, now you're bending the rules. Yeah. I know you're not breaking them, you're bending them.
He is. He was a Mr. World or whatever.
Mr. Universe. But then I guess if I bring up a professional wrestler, then all of the Rocks, like,
oh, the Rocks, come up. Too. Like,
Hulk Hogan was in Rocky 3.
He was in The Nanny.
Oh, yeah, in the various I feel before we get to Mr. T, we're gonna go ahead and take the wrestlers off.
Okay, well, if we're taking the wrestlers off, then yeah, that
is they're more professional
Piper.
Entertainers.
Okay,
wow.
Well, then we can't see. This is just gets rocky. I guess we're down to O.J. Simpson and and Michael Jordan now.
How quickly we forget about the King, LeBron James.
I don't. Nobody's forgetting. Just no. Nobody cares about it.
Now you just sound old. Yeah. Well, since we're about out of time, I'm just going to go ahead and give you the right answer, which of course is
waiting, buffering.
How about Lynn Swan was in? He had a fairly large role in The Last Boy Scout.
I actually was thinking about Alex. What's his name from Webster?
Oh, Alex Dick Butkus. Karras? Alex Karras.
Alex Karras.
Oh, he was Mongo. That's not a movie. Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yep. Shit. There we go.
Mongo. Yeah.
And he was in Paper Lions.
He punched a horse. I mean.
See, we've actually done pretty good just out of that
punched
one.
Punched a horse.
Never mind.
Done and done.
I like that. Punched a horse.
Yeah. Broke some chains.
All right. Well, that was actually a misdirect. The real answer, of course, is Shaq. In Kazam. All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I wish we could talk more, and I bet you wish we wouldn't. So we'll have this compromise, and that's about
thank
enough
you.
Of this.
Thank you to Billy West. That was a great interview. He's
Space Jam.
Very kind. Space
25th
Jam.
Anniversary.
I get the appeal of
July
thanking
6th.
Him, but taking it for granted is kind
Blu-ray,
of a hallmark
digital.
Of his career.
Yeah.
Let's keep doing that.
Get it now.
Fair enough. Fuck that guy.
All right. We take you for granted. Yeah, Billy West. Yay.
You're
and that's
best.
Enough of this.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Oh, this is enough of this.